Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
We're talking with Dr. Jade Kwa, senior pediatric emergency specialist. We have you on air right now, Jade. And how did it go last night, Jade? How's everything going with your team?
We're getting used to the fact that a whole bunch of travelers are coming back. So I think we're getting used to sort of like the added workload there. Also, you know, a lot of clusters with the sparkle tots and all that. So, you know, I think it's really just, it's like the perfect time to remind everybody to be super careful so we don't have more clusters of outbreaks, which is why, you know, we were quite concerned when some of the nightclubs were trying to host last hurrah parties earlier. And we sort of tried to get them to reconsider, because once you have like a large gathering of people, then there's like just a really high chance that there's another cluster outbreak.
Sure.
I'm so glad you brought that subject up, Jade, because this week, I know we're in a period of transition between clubs opening, clubs closing and so on, but I've seen a number of restaurants say that we're going to continue and we're going to just reverse our process, basically. And one or two have been quite brazen about it in the media, saying that we sell alcohol, so we expect just to sell more alcohol and maybe less food to cover the fact that pubs and nightclubs are closing. And I saw a number of restaurant cum bars in recent days, Jade, where it was quite packed and there was very little in the way of social distancing going on. So what would be your medical thoughts on that?
You know, I've said it before, this war against the viral pandemic has to be won together. So everybody in the community has to pull together, including restaurant owners. I think it would be very sensible to implement some of the measures about social distancing that have been recommended by the government. I mean, we do that in the hospital as well, even like with the patients and the caregivers, to get them to sit a little bit farther apart. And we're not asking people not to go out at all. I mean, obviously, if you're not well or if you have a positive travel history to areas of heightened vigilance like the US or UK, then you should be a little bit more careful. But if you're well and you haven't traveled anywhere and you'd like to go out for a meal with a small group of people, that's perfectly cool, but, you know, just be sensible. So social distancing and, you know, don't spit.
Yeah, don't hug. Don't hug, don't kiss, don't spit, right?
So, yeah, so just be sensible. But, you know, all this is what the customer can do. But on the business owner front, we do sort of the restaurant owners to also, you know, get behind this movement. I hope everybody does well, to be honest. I know it's a difficult time, and it's difficult for small businesses to thrive in a period like that. But, you know, we've really got to sort of be in this for the long haul.
On that point, Dr. Kwa, I was on the MRT this morning. Obviously, I got off at Brattle to come to SPH, and I don't know the answer to this. I'll be very frank. I mean, but many people still have to go to work. And I was on the MRT this morning. There was not even anything remotely close to what we would call the standard social distancing measures, you know, of a 1 meter gap. We were touching, you know, it was enough train where we were touching. Sometimes that happens on the buses. Is there anything we can do about that? Are there any tips or advice? Do we just look away from people? I mean, what could we do in this situation? We still have to get to work.
For sure. I mean, you know, this is certainly not a situation in which we're in a lockdown. We're not in Dorscon Red. You know, life still has to go on for, you know, in terms of commuters. So, you know, I think in this aspect, it really helps to take the cue from the government officials and, you know, the epidemiologists and infectious diseases people who are together in the work group. So for as long as they say, you know, it's okay to travel on public transportation, then, you know, I mean, if it's crowded and you cannot help but stand very close next to somebody, then that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, you just have to be quite careful about where you put your hands. And then, you know, I would suggest that once you leave the train and you get to the office, to, you know, maybe wash your hands. You know, it may not be the ideal situation, but we can't live in a bubble either. You know,
sure.
I mean, if you want to go out and have a meal, you know, go ahead. If you need to take public transportation and it's so crowded, you know, because everyone's on the same train, then, you know, that is what it is.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr.
With whatever in situation where you can do something about, then that's what we would, you know, be actively trying to wash our hands and have good hygiene. But yeah, certainly there are many circumstances in which it's very difficult to control.
We're speaking with Dr. Jade Kwa, Senior Pediatric Emergency Specialist, who's just come off, what is it, a 12-hour shift overnight,
yeah.
Jade? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And Jade, you know, when you look at how kids are dealing with this, the kids that you have been having to treat, first of all, do there seem to be a lot of children that are infected now with COVID-19 across Singapore?
I think one of the great pieces of news is that children don't really seem to be affected as much as the grown-ups, especially the older grown-ups with all sorts of like comorbidities.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of children who have acute respiratory symptoms. So sometimes it's difficult to differentiate from the outset. So if a child's coming with like fever and cough, or they've been exposed to some sort of a cluster outbreak, then, you know, we process them exactly the same way.
Yeah, good.
And later on when we find out that, you know, they were negative, then, you know, obviously that's fantastic for them, or they were positive and it makes the news. But, you know, a lot of patients still need to be processed. Thankfully, very few of them test positive for COVID, and, you know, for complications are certainly fewer than what we see in our population.
Yeah, that's great. And Jade, when somebody, let's say it's an adult, has to be hospitalized, is there any, what's the range and amount of time that they end up spending? Is there a difference, first of all, if they're in ICU versus a regular isolated ward? Or how much time are they actually spending in there before they're well? Is it a week, 2 weeks? Is there any kind of general number? I mean, we see that people are being released, you know, people are getting well.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of a general idea of how long people end up staying in hospital if they have to go?
I think this is quite a dynamic situation, to be honest, because I think previously they would be quite careful before they release a patient. So
sure.
They would want to have several, I think it was like 3 swabs that were negative before they would let them go.
Mm.
And the turnaround time for the test also, you know, these are things that need to be taken into consideration. So there's some things that would factor into the process of how long a patient stays in the hospital that are purely to do with logistics, purely to do with the fact that this is a public healthcare crisis, rather than the fact that the patients themselves are actually ill. Right? You know, they're ill in the sense of requiring a lot of medical attention. So, I mean, just by virtue of that, I mean, I would say it's fair to say that somebody in ICU would be in hospital a lot longer because that person would actually be ill. The way we treat patients or whom we admit and all that, it's really quite, it's quite special, quite exceptional during a public healthcare crisis, because we're thinking really about surveillance and what we want to put out there to expose the rest of the people, as opposed to in normal circumstances where you would really just be admitting people who are very sick and require medical attention and letting anyone with just like a touch of flu or whatever go back home. But in this instance, we're being very, very careful, which is one of the reasons why Singapore has been doing, you know, relatively well compared to other unfortunate countries where you see the death toll reaching in the hundreds daily.
Yeah.
And healthcare workers sort of like, you know, succumbing to this illness, you know, in death. Because I think the Singapore government's really working quite quickly and really very prepared to step in and intervene this time around with the memory of SARS quite fresh. So, you know, I mean, it's really, really kudos to everybody. I mean, it's tough. It's not going to be a perfect situation. People always want to have news faster, want to have test kits faster, want to have vaccinations faster, want to have cures faster. But, you know, for given the circumstances, you know, for what it's worth, I think we've done, you know, really very, very well.
Yeah, Jade, you mentioned there, obviously, you're a pediatric specialist, and you mentioned that fortuitously around the world and in Singapore, the rates, infection rates for children does seem to be very low, and we hope that continues. However, in recent days, we've had two prominent clusters in an international school and a kindergarten. And I was in a lift yesterday with my neighbours who were just about to take their kids to the local kindergarten, and they were genuinely unsure whether they should continue to keep their kids in the local kindergarten. What would be your advice to parents listening now who are almost certainly facing that dilemma? Should they keep going to kindergarten? What are the do's and don'ts for parents in that position?
I think at some point, the government's probably going to make a call about whether or not schools should stay open or no. The issue right now is that for the younger age group, like nursery and kindergarten, in general, these children are, you know, they're more immature. Mm. So they're more likely to get into a situation where they're spitting on each other, or drooling on each other, kissing each other, putting toys in their mouth. I mean, this is just what normal behavior for children in this age group, which tends to precipitate, a cluster outbreak in a situation where things are fluid-borne, waterborne, like a virus like that. So it definitely can be tricky. I think the issue is that it's whether or not parents are able to effectively educate their children, their very small children at this point in time, and whether they can do anything for other people's children. So it's certainly quite tricky. I think it's very difficult to advise parents, however, not to send their children to school when the government hasn't specifically said that schools are meant to close. And the reason is because many parents are working. I mean, you mentioned yourself that the train was quite full this morning, and lots of us, myself included, we're working parents. Not everybody has the resources to pull their children from schools and look after them at home. I mean, if you can, and you'd like to, there is definitely no reason to judge you, no reason to think that you're like super kiasu or kiasi or whatever. Mm. I think if you don't feel comfortable and you are able to look after your children at home and you want to sort of just homeschool them for a little while, they're very young, you don't want them to, get into some drooly mess in school, then go ahead. This is the time to do what you are able to do. But if you are unable to do that because you're working, you don't have that much help at home, you have multiple children, then, the government hasn't said schools have to close. So go ahead and send your kids to school. But there's always a risk. Even on a normal day, there's always a risk your kid's going to catch like hand, foot, mouth or something.
Yeah, of course.
That's the age group where these things happen. And the bodies are also building up an immunity, So it tends to be, on a normal day, it tends to be that children in the nursery and kindergarten age tend to come to the hospital with some kind of a fever, some kind of cough, some kind of runny nose. And that can continue until they build up some kind of immunity. Like in primary school, maybe that incidence drops a little bit. But when they're quite young, then this is really the at-risk age group, to be honest, for something like that.
Yeah, thanks to Jade Kwa, the Senior Pediatric Emergency Specialist, for giving us that update, what's happening, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.